The Pacific Group is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. All members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meeting. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening. My name is Drew, and I am an alcoholic. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers and a main speaker. Our first 10-minute speaker is Brian A.
My name is Brian. I'm an alcoholic. It makes me want to spit on the mic. Go full Daffy Duck on it. Wow. So I want to thank Mary for the privilege and honor of speaking in front of my home group. It's a privilege and an honor that I dread, but here it is nonetheless. And I hate going first because you can't riff on anything. You can't go, how about them 12 steps? And there's nothing there. So I think I'm just going to get right into it. I'm an alcoholic. It's the most important thing I can tell you. And I'm an alcoholic who no longer drinks today, and that's the second most important thing I can tell you. And that's a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, and more specifically, the Pacific Group. Many of you who know my wife, Sarah, and I know that we are leaving to retire in a faraway country in 9 days. And the hardest thing is going to be leaving this. Leaving you, leaving our base, you know, our foundation, our roots behind. And fortunately, thanks to this little camera here, we won't leave it completely behind, and we'll be able to stay connected, and we're really grateful for that. So I was born, as were most of us, and I was born specifically in Canada, and grew up in a family of professional non-feelers and non-emoters. We are military, we are Protestant, we are Canadian, we are Scottish heritage. We don't talk about anything in our house. And if there's something that's bothering us, we just keep it to ourselves because we are not interested in that. And when my middle sister, she's older than I was, I have 3 older sisters, when my middle sister and I were doing the dishes when I was 12 years old, she attempted to slash her wrist while we were doing the dishes. Now, most families, you're going to be in group therapy that next day or something like that. The way we dealt with it is we never mentioned it again. And so when I started drinking, you know, I did not drink to suppress emotions. I did not drink to suppress memories. I drank to exhume emotions. I drank to exhume memories. I drank to live my feelings and not push them aside for the first time. But I didn't start that way. We moved to California in 1969, and that was like a big deal, especially when you live near the Arctic Circle most of your life. So, by the way, shout out to my Canadian peeps in the audience here. And that's jealousy. That hissing, that's jealousy. Someday you're going to want oil. Someday you're going to want water. And you'll just take it from us, probably. But anyway. We moved here, and in the 10th, I was a good kid, a straight-A student. In the 10th grade, somebody introduced me to weed, and I loved it right away. I went from being a straight-A student to a straight-fail student in 1 year, and I did the, you know, I started with all the outside issues because When I was 16, it was them. They were old, like I am now, and they had ruined the world, and they drank. And my mother was an alcoholic. And there was us. We were young. We had long hair, and we were going to do these things, and we continued to ruin the world anyway. But so the first year, I did those things. And then one night, I was at a party, and somebody handed me a glass of wild turkey. And alcohol became my drug of no choice, as my friend Charlie likes to say, because alcohol did something those other things didn't do. And that is, it made me not care about what you think about me and about what I think about me. And I painfully care about what you think about me and what I think about me. Now, I'm 37 years sober. You'd think you would get over this by now. Nay, nay, nay. You know, there is a way to get past not thinking about yourself, and it's called being of constant service to other people. I'm just not capable. And, I can do it for a little bit, you know, I'm out of myself for an hour, but then I wake up, what can Brian do for Brian today? So, but alcohol took that away. Alcohol took that away right away, and it worked for me. I became a daily drinker because if something works, why would you wait? Why would you... this feels great. Let's wait 4 more days to do that. No, I do it every day, and that's how it worked for me. I got married, something about an Irish woman. I'm going to move on. And then I got married again, had children. And in my last 2 years of my second marriage, by the way, I'm the common denominator of every bad relationship I've ever been in. That's just who I am. But my second marriage, I had a child, and I reached Christmas of 1984, and I'm drinking around the clock. And I know I'm an alcoholic. And my wife said, "Listen, I'm gonna leave and take our son with us because I can't stand the way you drink." And I would like to say that I quit drinking in order to save that marriage, but that's not true. I am more than happy to throw a marriage on the bonfire of my alcoholism because you can get another wife. Just ask. But what I did not want to do was visit that child on the weekends. Not that I'm a good father or a particularly wonderful father at all, but there's just things, I've failed at most everything in my life, but there's just one thing I just did not want to fail at, and that was that. And so I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and my sobriety date was January the 14th, 1985, class of 85, and for my first 4 years, I was over in the valley, and I went to meetings. I came late. I left early. Hung out in the back. Hey there, guys. And but we could smoke cigarettes back then. You can't do that now. And and I kind of did the steps, but not really. I kind of had a sponsor, but not really. And I would come home and tell my wife that I'm doing this for you. Hope you're happy about that. And I know there's a God because I stayed sober with 4 years of that kind of garbage sobriety. And then my wife had gotten busy. And when I say my wife, it's my ex-wife. She had gotten busy in Al-Anon with this woman named Betty Ann Z. Many of you know her. And her husband is Bob Z, member of our group. And Bob and Betty Ann saved my life. We were about to get divorced. Instead, they said, "Sit down with us." And they talked to us, and they said, "This is what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. We're busy. We don't see each other a lot. That helps." And he said, "I was out among them when I was using and drinking. I'm out among them now that I'm sober." If he had told me to stand on my head for a year, I would have done that. And instead, he said, "Why don't you just come along with me?" And, it's the kind of sobriety that I miss. And it was what we used to call get-in-the-car sobriety. Bob would pull up on a Friday night, "Get in the car." And I'm like, "Where are we going?" He goes, "Doesn't matter, get in the car," So we'd get in the car, there'd be a bunch of other guys in the car, we'd figure out the pecking order in the car, who's on the hump, whatever, and then we would, where are we going? "We're going to San Diego to hear your grand sponsor, Keith Carpenter, speak." Okay, we'd go down, we'd have dinner, we'd listen to Keith, which was wonderful, and because they're Keith and Bob, we would always have to have ice cream after the meeting, and so we would go for ice cream, and the next night he'd pull up and go get in the car. You know, where are we going? We're going to go to the movies tonight. Oh, okay, great. You know, and it was great sobriety. It was wonderful, and it was action sobriety. We were busy every night, and you know, he brought me to the Pacific Group, and I started getting lots of commitments, and you know, that little space over there. I've been taping this meeting for 30 years. I mean, I am going to miss that so bad, that control freak thing, you know. These are the lights. I have controlled them for 30 years.
If I didn't like you, maybe you got 10 minutes, maybe you didn't. No, I see. Everybody gets their 10 minutes. Main speakers all get the 38 minutes.
Always. Anyway, so... you know, so we got busy in Alcoholics Anonymous and got busy in the Pacific Group, and my life got better and better and better and better. And, you know, that marriage eventually ended after 27 years. We did everything we could to keep it together, but it would not hold. But, you know, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, we sat down and in 5 minutes we had decided everything. And I gave her the house. I didn't give her the house. It's not mine to give. I ceded my interest in that house so we could maintain a family home. And, you know, and we're friends today, you know. I was about to begin my, you know, my bachelor life in AA, and I tripped through that. But eventually I got very lucky, and on one evening at the Monday Night Encino meeting, I was in line to thank the speaker, and I met this very lovely woman who I'm married to today, Sarah, as most of you know, who works a better program than mine, and you know, sponsors more people than I sponsor, and just gives this program everything. And the reason that we can go to France and retire together is because we have a household that believes in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a partner that I trust and love, and who has a tremendous foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's going to be very, very hard to say goodbye to all of you. We will be back every year. We will see you on Zoom if you're up there at 6:30 in the morning on that stupid cups up thing. But anyway, my time is up. You told me you were going to give me 15. Okay, all right, thanks. And we love you, I love you, and I'll miss you all. Thank you for my sobriety.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Grace L.
My name is Grace, and I'm an alcoholic. It's a long walk when you sit in death row back there. I want to thank Mary for asking me to share in my home group tonight. Like Brian said, it's an honor and a privilege, even when it doesn't feel like it. It's a tough act going behind Brian. And don't shirk me on my 10 minutes either. No, you just admitted to that in front of God and everybody up here. We'll miss Brian and Sarah. I grew up with Brian. My sobriety date is 10/10/2006. And so he had about 15 years when I showed up as a newcomer here. So Brian's been a big part of my sobriety, and I sure will miss you guys. You guys have been great AA members for many years here. Oh, God. It's so daunting to be up here. I've done this many times, and I shouldn't be this nervous, but it's always this kind of feeling in front of my own home group. I could go drive to Riverside and speak, and it not be that big of a deal, but every time I got to get in front of my family and speak, it's tell the truth. My grand sponsor's sitting right there looking at me. My sponsor's on Zoom. Hi. Hi, Hilda. But it's good to be up here. You know, I grew up as an only child, and I thought that that was my biggest problem. I thought that's exactly, if I only had a sibling, a brother or sister, that I could feel okay in my skin. And the problem with that is that that was to become the theme for many items in my life and many feelings that I had in my life. And I grew up with two wonderful parents. I had a father who was a functioning alcoholic, and I talk about his drinking not to say this is why I'm an alcoholic, but I grew up not in a house that saw alcohol as a negative thing. You know, my father would wake up in the morning, take a shot of whiskey. You know, he left a shot glass on the kitchen counter every morning, and he would get up, take a shot of whiskey, take a shower, and go to work, and I never saw anything different from that man. He'd come home, have a couple of beers, a couple more shots. At work, he used to keep a pint of whiskey underneath the seat of his truck, and on his breaks, he'd go out and read the paper, take a shot of whiskey, and go to work. And that's what he did. And I can tell you that I grew up never wanting for anything. There was always food in my belly. There was always a roof over my head. I always had clothes. So I didn't see drinking as a negative thing growing up. I took my first drink of that whiskey that was in the refrigerator. I believe it was Kessler. It tasted horrible. I was about 11 years old, and it was horrible tasting. And I managed to get two shots down of that. And what that did for me was it gave me this warm, bubbly feeling. I went to my room, did a couple of somersaults, whatever, and didn't kind of think about it again after that. And what happened for me is about 13, I was in junior high school, and feelings were strong. I was like, oh my God. I remember feeling so out of sorts and so awkward going into junior high school. And the thought of that drink came up again for me, you know. I just could not stand the way I felt in my skin as a teenager, as a young teen. And I found my people. I got invited to a backyard party, and what was going on was there was lots of keg beer flowing and music, you know, there was a band playing, and I got really, really drunk on keg beer and made out with a boy that night, and I felt really, really good. And what happened for me that night was I no longer cared. You know, Brian talked about this, those feelings. You know, he said, I drank to live my emotions. I drank to not feel my emotions. It was too much. I was an emotional-only child. I just knew the reason why I felt the way I felt is because I was an only child, right? But that night, I didn't care. I had the best time of my life, and what happened was I woke up the next morning, and I was puking my brains out, but my first thought was, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. And I proceeded to do just that. Now, I didn't become a daily drinker at the age of 13, but a lot of things shifted in my mind, right? So now all I can think about is, when's the next party? That's all I care about. When's the next party? And that's what we did, you know? I grew up in Venice, California, and it was a great life. It was back in the 80s. And we had a lot of good times, you know. As a teenager, I spent my summers on Venice Beach buying nickel bags of weed, drinking beer, smoking weed on the beach, and body surfing and surfing. And, you know, honestly, I hear speakers sometimes say, I wouldn't trade my worst day sober for my best day out there. And I think, you're crazy. Because when I think back to my childhood and my teenage years living and growing up in Venice, it was great. It was dog town, suicidal tendencies. We were going to punk shows every weekend. And, you know, me and Andy's here tonight. I saw her in the restroom, and we have a lot of the same friends, and I have a lot of the same memories, and Andy still sees a lot of those people. And it was a good time. You know, and what happened for me is, moving forward, I was about 14, my mom came to me, and she said, me and your dad are going to get a divorce. And I cried for about 1 minute, because it took me 1 minute to figure out that I'm going to get away with a lot more with my mom. My dad was strict disciplinarian, and I knew there was not a lot I could get away with him. And that summer, turning 15, going into high school, going to Venice High, was the party summer of the century for me. Now, I partied so hard that summer that I had to give myself a timeout. By the time I got to high school after that summer, I was like, I took a break. I had to take a beat. It was just too much for me. I had done PCP. I had tried everything. I did all of it that you could do in that summer, and I kind of overdid it. But what happened for me is I had dreams and hopes, and I wanted to become a lawyer. I wanted to be a veterinarian, and slow but sure, I started trading those dreams and hopes in for king alcohol, and they started to become less important to me. And I was always a good student. I was a fairly smart kid. I always had A's and B's, and then I just struggled, and then I just didn't care. And then I started ditching. And what happened was, is I had a counselor say to me, you know what, you can do better than this. You have such potential. And I don't know about you, but when people are telling you have potential, it's not a good thing. It means you're just not living up to it. You're just not living up to it. And that was a theme in my life. And so, you know what, I made it through high school, and I get through all of that. And at the age of 18, I become a daily drinker. And I remember the day that I was drinking beer. I had started drinking every day, and I had a job. I didn't go to college. I traded that dream in. And I was drinking at cold Bud Light, and I was writing bills out with checks. We used to do that back when I was younger. We used to write checks out. Now we don't do that. Everything's electronic. But I said to myself, I said, you know what, this is the life. And I'm going to drink every day, and I don't care. I knew I was an alcoholic at 18. I knew I was like my dad at 18, but I didn't care because I figured as long as I paid my bills and I went to work, no one's going to tell me about my drinking, just like nobody told my dad because he provided well for our family. And that's where that attitude comes in. Now, you know, fast forward, I start doing a lot of other things, and I find my perfect combination, and that's uppers, which could be speed or coke, with drinking, because then I wouldn't be legless, and then I wouldn't be blacking out, and I could drink a lot more, and I'm always watching my weight, and so speed was perfect. And that became my perfect combination, and actually, that worked for many years for me, you know? But what happened somewhere around the age of 35, and I smashed through many relationships just like Brian. I just didn't get married. Somehow I managed to scrape by and not do that. And I am the common denominator, the bad person in those relationships, because I could tell you, all those people I was in a relationship with, they're all married and they have kids and they're happy. I'm still single. I'll just be an old spinster, you know. But so definitely, that became obvious that I was that person in those relationships. But you know what? At the age of 35, I did something that I never thought I would do. And, you know, I used to judge heroin addicts, people who stuck needles in their arms. And at 35, I was that person. And so what I want to tell you is be careful what you judge, because we all have many yets left. And I never thought I would walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I was 36 when I finally got there, with track marks up and down my arms. And I was so ashamed of who I'd become and the lady I'd become that I couldn't look anybody in the eyes. And what happened for me is it was about February of 2006, I fell out and had a seizure because I overshot the mark. I like to shoot, not heroin, but cocaine. I'm an uppers girl. I told you guys that. I don't do opiates. I don't do downers. I want to be up. Well, I overshot the mark, and I had a seizure, and I woke up with my boyfriend giving me mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. And I was like, get off of me. What are you doing? And he was like, I thought you were dead. I said, I'm fine. Now, I imagine that was scary for him when he sees his girlfriend flip-flopping around like a fish out of water, but I was fine. I didn't suffer any repercussions. But that started my journey, right? In and out of AA. I knew it was time to try to get sober. And so what I refer to is between February 2006 and October 2006, that's my purgatory, because I could no longer drink and do what I was doing. But I couldn't stop drinking and doing what I was doing. You know, so I was in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had called a lady, her name was Toni, and she directed me to Karen G and Aspen B, and I got Aspen on the phone, and that began my journey in Pacific Group, and what that looked like was 7 meetings, 7 commitments, getting involved, and, you know, I was raised by Pacific Group. They've taught me well. I have a great foundation here in Pacific Group. I did all of my steps. I got involved in sober softball, and that became a huge community for me that I'm still part of. You know, I'm now running a scholarship program to get women into tournaments to play sober softball, new in sobriety, and I live a great life now, you know, through the process of steps and listening to a sponsor and taking direction that I didn't always believe in. You know, I've got a great life. You know, today I live with my mom right up the street in Culver City, and it's not been easy for me. I take care of her now. I moved in with her about 6 years ago when I didn't really need to move in with her, and my sponsor tried to say, hey, we better talk about that. I was like, no, it's fine. And about a year into living with her, I was like, I'm gonna kill her. And it's been a real big struggle. So, you know, I work through that, but I'm giving back to my mom, and I've had to make amends with her. And so everything good in my life I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new, I want to welcome you. Please stay, stick to your seat, stay here, stay with us. Thank you, guys.
Our main speaker tonight is Susie A.
That step. I'm sober. Thank you. I said I didn't need help. I need help. I'm Susie. I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here tonight. Safe, sane, and sober. I mean, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love the Pacific Group. And I love the first two 10-minute speakers. Brian, give me 30 minutes only. I got to get down early. I really identified with the first two 10-minute speakers. They talked about feelings. Well, I'm totally numb right now. That's a very interesting feeling for me. I'm numb. Thank you, Murph, for asking me to share here tonight. As I said, I love AA, and I love the Pacific Group. I spent my first 34 years here as an active member. And then I moved to the desert for 14 years, and now I'm back in the area. And this group did everything for me in my life. It's amazing what you do if you stay here and stay in this group. If you're new, I hope you're desperate, because I certainly had to be desperate. There was no other way for me to get sober until I was totally desperate. I tried many times. I also, my nervous voice, I also tried a lot of things before I got sober. I tried religion. I was born and raised a Christian Scientist. I've been a Baptist, a Lutheran, Presbyterian, and I converted to Judaism in the synagogue that we were in. The synagogue, yeah. I was, my name in the synagogue was Hannah. So that's where we started 40 years of sobriety there. I love that place. And then I tried therapy. You know, I went to a lot of therapists. I never told the truth. I never told them that I drank. And it took me 5 years in sobriety to pay those guys off, because I never told them what was going on. And then I tried the self-help books, you know, all the things they talk about in the big book, you know. And for those people who are older, we might remember The Power of Positive Thinking. Oh, my God, I love that book, you know. I opened it, and I learned how to be a friend and how to be enthusiastic. And I had that vodka bottle right there on the end of the book, you know. I couldn't do anything that long. The longest I've done anything is Alcoholics Anonymous, and that includes three marriages, so that's what that took. And I'm born and raised right here in West Los Angeles. I drank here. I couldn't move when I drank. I couldn't go anywhere. I mean, you could tell a block away I was drunk, but I couldn't go anywhere. So I've been right in that area when I did my drinking. I started drinking at 15, but I didn't get drunk every day. I went on to college, and all those people seemed to know what was going on. And I swear to God, I didn't. I've heard people say I didn't have the book of life at all. So what did a girl like me do? I quit college and got married. I married my high school sweetheart. We would sail off into the sunset, have two kids, white picket fence, and I really believe that, because there was a lot of television during that time that talked about that, you know? Father Knows Best. Oh my God, these shows where guy was in a suit and she was in heels when he put the kids to bed, and they sat down to dinner in their heels and their suits. I mean, where is that? I mean, never in my life. And so I married my high school sweetheart, and here's where my drinking changes. I'm 20 years old. We got married young then. It's a long time ago, you guys. And we had two kids, two boys, that I delivered at St. John's Hospital drunk, because I was in trouble with alcohol at 20 years old. And during that marriage, I became a chef. I thought it would be wonderful to have baked Alaska and sauerbraten or anything that had to do with wine, right? Never counted it as drinking. And after a while, I would get up in the morning and start cooking. And it got me in trouble, so I started drinking in the morning. And that man, he sued me on the grounds of alcoholism for our divorce, and they could do that back then. And I can't believe that he called me an alcoholic. I mean, I was just amazed. Anyway, he left me with a 2-week-old and a 4-year-old baby, and I was not ready for this world. And, of course, I had to go back to work. So I started working for lawyers. She's not being quiet, but she has very high heels on. I have to admire that. So I went back to work and started working for lawyers. I have a long stream of lawyers in my life. And what happened is a neighbor noticed that I smelled funny on a Saturday morning, and that's because I was in trouble with my drinking. And she had me call central office. And a lady there answered the phone, and she sent me or asked me if I wanted to go to Friendly House, which is a wonderful 12-step house in Los Angeles. And I had a wonderful experience there. I knew nothing about alcoholics. I knew nothing about AA. My parents both died of alcoholism. My grandmother died of alcoholism. So I'm the only one in my family that is sober. But that Friendly House was a great, great experience. And I got out of Friendly House. I went to meetings in Ohio Street. And I would, you know, get come in late, leave early, sit in the back of the room, hide back there, and I would judge the speaker, which I don't do tonight, and try it up here. And I left, and you know, and I left the meeting, and I decided that if I just drank a little wine, everything would be okay, because I was drinking vodka. So I left the meeting that night, and I bought a half gallon of vin rosé to have one drink. I've never had one drink. I know nothing about social drinking. So I finished the half gallon that night and woke up with a hangover. So I had learned about the morning drink in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I had a morning drink that morning. And this is where my drinking got terrible after leaving Alcoholics Anonymous. And some of you may know that, how that works, boy. Coming in and out of AA is very painful. Mm. And after leaving AA the first year, it was Christmas Eve, and they were talking about feelings. I had a lot of feelings on Christmas Eve because I actually believed in Santa Claus, I guess. And so I took my kids and put them in the car on Christmas Eve, and I got on the Santa Monica Freeway. I don't know where I was going, but the cops pulled me right over as I ran into the car in front of me. And a nice girl like me, I fell out when they opened the door. And they sent me to Sybil Brand on Christmas Eve. That is a very busy place. Oh, my God. I thought, what am I doing? A nice girl like me doing at Sybil Brand on Christmas Eve. And my parents came to get me. And you know what? Thank God I work for lawyers, because I called my boss. And just before they were spraying me down, my boss came in and got me out. So I'm grateful for all the time I worked for lawyers, let me tell you. And I want to get going, but the worst part of my drinking now is after leaving AA, going in and out. I'd go to 26 and Broadway for a few months, and then I just couldn't get sober. And I got into this law office that I loved. I loved all eight of them. It's in my fifth step, but I did. I loved all of them. And before they asked me to leave, which they did, my boss had a party, a swimming party out in the San Fernando Valley. And I never went over the hill. I don't go to the valley. I couldn't. I couldn't move. And so it was a Sunday, and I thought, well, I'll have a few drinks, get in the car, and drive to the valley. And the pool, everybody was swimming in the pool, they were drinking. I already had a couple drinks at home, because I don't go anywhere without drinking. And so I dove in that pool, and we swam around, and he had a barbecue pit that was built under the ground. But it was lit, but it didn't have a grill on it. And I got out of that swimming pool, and I slipped and fell in that barbecue pit. Yeah, it's funny now, but I had these huge blisters all down my right side. I was burnt. I was in UCLA for 2 months, and never thinking that drinking is my problem. That's the denial of this disease. The last thing I want to talk about is my last, you know, I went in and out for a long time, and my last drunk driving, I went to jail a couple times, a nice girl like me. But the hardest thing for me during this drinking is I was working, had two kids, and a job. And I'll tell you, sober is so much easier. I would lose my kids. I would lose a job all the time. I got caught for bringing a quart of vodka bottle up to my mouth with a brown paper bag when the lawyer walked in. Can you imagine? There's nowhere to hide a quart of vodka. But really, trying to keep all that together was killing me. And I would do things like, oh my God, I felt sorry for myself. I would wear a lot of makeup to make up for it, you know, all this powder makeup. And then I would try to put on false eyelashes after having vodka in the shower. And I'd get one on and one up. And oh, I thought I looked just beautiful. Because I had to cover the feelings about myself. That's what it's all about. And the last time I went to jail, it was my 30th birthday, and I had no friends. And my parents finally stopped helping me, and I'd had a lot of friends in my life, but not anymore. And I got picked up for going too slow on Pico Boulevard. I had that one eye, and they pulled me over. There used to be a frosty freeze right there. They pulled me over in the frosty freeze, and they took me to the Santa Monica drunk tank on my 30th birthday. And I got home. I woke up that next morning and had to walk home barefoot, hungover, bloated from alcohol. I didn't eat, but because it's too much calories in alcohol. And here's what happened. I got sent to drunk driving school. It was right next to my office, right next to my building. And I would go to drunk driving school, come home and drink because they had long breaks, and go back to drunk driving school. But a man from Alcoholics Anonymous spoke one night, and he gave me hope. I knew that I needed to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew I was an alcoholic, and I just didn't know that my life was unmanageable. I knew that I was an alcoholic, and that man gave me hope. And what happened to me is on March 18th, which was a Sunday, I was drinking a quart of vodka that day. The next morning, I woke up on March 19th, went into an alcoholic convulsion, and I haven't had a drink since. Talk about a spiritual experience. And let me tell you, I was totally, totally ready, as Brian said, to do anything you asked me. I would have stood on my head here. And I ended up in the Pacific group. I was 7 days sober. I think it was Joe A. and Bev that got me over here to the Pacific group. I was 7 days sober. And what I loved at Ohio Street on Tuesday night, I heard the laughter. Oh my God, there was so much fun going on in that meeting on Tuesday night. And our meeting was maybe 200 people. Some of the people here remember it. We knew everybody. Anyway, the first thing I got a sponsor. I had not done that before. And my sponsor told me I had to go to 7 meetings a week. Now, I had 2 kids and a full-time job, but I wanted to get sober, and I did that. I went to 7 meetings a week. I had commitments, and I think that's what held me in good stead is the structure of the group, what we did here. You know, how we learned to be on time, how to take the action. You know, all the stuff that I learned here has held me in good stead for sure. My 2 kids were kind of grateful I got sober. I hadn't physically abused them, but I hadn't been home a lot. And I would do things like come home and make this big deal at mom's home, you know, and I'd make dinner, and then I'd go into a blackout, and I'd make dinner again. And they got kind of confused. But now I'm sober, and I'm coming home at night, because my sponsor says, come home at night, have dinner with the kids, and go to a meeting. By the time I got sober, those kids were 8 and 4. They're in their late 50s? Oh, my God. Anyway, I loved AA right away. And if you're new, I suggest you get a sponsor and a best friend. You tell your sponsor what she wants to hear, and tell your best friend everything. My best friend is Nancy in the first row. She's known me 49 years, and we've been friends. We've told each other everything. Lots of fun, lots of secrets. And she's ahead of me by almost 2 years. And we would sit together at meetings. We had 2 little boys there at the same age that would go to the yard. And then we put them in the bathtub, and we go to the Saturday night meeting. I mean, she showed me the ropes of the Pacific group. So get a best friend. It's really fun. And at the end of my first year, I think it was probably my easiest. I think that, for me, my opinion is you just stay sober, you guys. I didn't do anything perfectly my first year. Trust me. And I was with Nancy, so you got to trust me. But I stayed sober, and that's what counts. And I was so, first years are amazing. They really are. And after my first year, I got married, met boy on campus. You know how that is. Some of you do. And we looked at each other and decided to get married. Chuck was 10 years sober, and I was 1 year sober. And I'll tell you, I didn't know anything about myself at 1 year. I didn't know who Susie was. I was still a brat. I was still self-obsessed. And, oh, I had every character defect in the world when I married poor Chuck. And Chuck had 5 kids. I had 2, and we had 2 more. So we had his, hers, and ours. And I'm grateful I love kids, because I do. And I have 14 grandkids today, so my favorite thing in life besides Alcoholics Anonymous. And that marriage, I have to tell on myself. During that marriage, I was really, really, really not very grown up. And Chuck would be very active in Alcoholics Anonymous and talking to people, and I didn't get any attention. So I'd throw myself on the floor. And he would leave me there and go to a meeting. I had to grow up here. I really did. I think it's hard to grow up myself. I'm still not crazy about it, but we do it. And Chuck and I were divorced when I was 17 years sober. I had worked the steps in my first year. And at 17 years sober, we got that divorce, and I wanted to drink. Those baby emotional feelings, all that stuff that Brian didn't have growing up, were coming out at me. I mean, I just, everything. And Chuck got a girlfriend, and he wanted to bring her to the Pacific Group. Oh, my God, if you could have seen me. She can't be here. This is my group. I mean, I just got bratty. And, of course, thank God for amends, because I had to make amends to her. And, in fact, I've talked to her several times and brought her down for my daughter's wedding and stuff like that. Because here, when you make a mess like that, you got to clean it up, right? And I have. I did. And so we were divorced. And I was alone and single for a while. And, you know, I decided with my life that I would raise 4 kids and stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I would cry on Saturday night and eat grilled cheese sandwiches. And, oh, poor me. But anyway, I met my favorite husband right after that, the love of my life. And I think part of that because I had grown up. I had grown up here. I didn't have to worry about getting him a cup of coffee and what he was doing for me. Oh, my God, I hear the crazy. He doesn't take out the trash. I hear the craziest thing from women about why they're going to get a divorce. He doesn't take out the trash. What am I going to do with him? Go take it out yourself. But Bob and I got married. First of all, he moved out from Wisconsin, and he'd gotten sober in the Pacific Group in 1970, and so we knew a lot of the same people, and we did this cross-country dating. I'd go on an airplane every Friday afternoon and come back on Monday morning and go to work, and so he just moved out and moved in, and we didn't tell Clancy, and Clancy was his sponsor. So Clancy wasn't going to talk to him until we got married, and we got married, and a lot of the old-timers were here. And like I said, the greatest thing about that relationship is that I had matured, and he had matured. And we were madly in love. We had a great relationship, and it was fun. And it was all based in AA and God. Let me tell you, I do believe in God. I always get to the end and forget I talk about God, but I will in a minute. But I finally was able to retire, and we moved to the desert. And Bob loved golf, so the desert was, you know, great for him. And we had the AA desert is great. It really is. I love it. And what happened was after we moved there and we were at the powwow 1 year, Bob had a heart attack and died. And that was 7 years ago. Wow. I still talk to him when I swim. Wow. And I'll tell you what happened to me. It was really the hardest time in my life. But we were current, and he was the love of my life, and we both knew it. And what happened during that time is, again, for me, is I got deeper in prayer and meditation. You know, I was new to all that stuff, even though I'd been religious in my life or tried all those things. And I'd learned very early to get on my knees. In fact, I got on my knees tonight with one knee. It was really sweet. One knee, because one knee is really bad, and got a new one there. I can still do it. But I learned here to get on my knees when I was new. And simply, I didn't know what I was doing. I just said, God, keep me sober. And at night, I thanked him. And as I got older in sobriety, it got deeper and changed as things happen in your life. I remember one day when I had to go to work because I'd missed so much time from drinking that I had to get into this job and I didn't have a babysitter. And things like that just, when I was new, just got to me. And so my neighbor comes over and says, I'll take your kids. I heard that, you know, don't have a babysitter. And all the little things in my life, in my sober life that happened, got me closer to prayer and to meditation. And when Chuck passed away, I got very deep into prayer and meditation. And I remember Pat Y came over. Bob passed away. Pat Y lived, 300 yards from me. She had a backpack on and moved in for the 2 weeks. And we watched this one show every day, and then she took me to a meeting. And, you know, I got everything I needed in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, people gave me advice like you should go to a, you know, group therapy, you should go to grief therapy, and you should go to the workshop. And I tried all five things, and nothing works better than Alcoholics Anonymous for me. Going to a meeting every day and telling people how I'm doing and see how you're doing. You know, and that's what helped me more than anything. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to be a great mom. I'm a great mom. I'm a great grandmother. But I learned it here from other people. And so we moved out there. I finally decided a year ago. I'd been in the desert, and I had a four-bedroom house with four baths and just me. And my grandkids were growing up. They weren't coming out to swim in the pool and do all that. So I put the house up for sale and moved. I went from four bedrooms, four baths to, 750 square feet in Leisure World. Woohoo! There's Nancy and Don and Pat and Mary Ellen and myself, and we're the only five that have brown hair. The rest are whiteheads over there. We're going to have our own special meeting. And so, but what that is for me, because when I got sober, it was all about money, property, and prestige. I still wanted all those things. And when I sold that house and went down from three closets to one small closet and got rid of all that stuff, I'm really happy today. It's enough, you know? I have enough, and that's what's really important. And that wasn't always the way it was for me. But today it is, and I love my life today. I love being with the girls in Leisure World. Nancy plays pickleball, Pat walks, and I swim. So we all have exercise every morning. The one thing about exercise, I believe, is when I first got sober, I had the loudest head. You know, the committee was there. Oh, my God, I wake up every morning with all this stuff. And so I'd put on my running shoes when I was brand new and go off and walk or run. I finally started running 5 miles a day, and it would calm my head. I mean, it's amazing. Then I did yoga for 40 years, which did a lot of meditation and prayer for me. But I want to tell you something. I tell my sponsees, if they exercise, this counts as two meetings, because it changes your whole head. It's amazing what it does for you, and it does for me. And now I swim because I'm older and can't walk. Now, I can walk a little. But exercise is important. The other thing that I learned in the Pacific Group is how to take action. You know, I learned a lot about action. I've learned how to take action for everything. The other thing that I really learned is how to say yes. You know, it's the funniest thing. My head wants to say no to everything. Do you want to speak? No. Do you want to pick up a newcomer? No. Do you want to go to the... No. I mean, I've had to do the opposite of my head for almost 49 years. Because, no. Ask Murphy. I tried to make her... I'm going to talk her out of it. But today I say yes to everything, and that's because my life is so much better when I say yes. And yeah, this group, this AA thing is all about love and kindness, and I never knew that. You know, when I got in here, I was selfish and a brat, and today it's about love and kindness. All the things that we do here are about that. I really believe that. I do meditate every day now, which I don't believe you have to. But for me, after I moved to Leisure World, I wasn't grateful for a while. I just couldn't get my head wrapped around it. And it's new meetings, new people, and you know, it's hard. I mean, I knew everybody in the Pacific group for years. And in the desert, I knew everybody. And now it's like, woo, Nancy and Pat and I kind of hang out at meetings, but I don't know the people real well. It doesn't feel the warmth that I felt in the Pacific group. And so I started doing a meditation on gratefulness and positivity, and it's really helped me. I mean, I'm not ungrateful, but in the morning, my head doesn't want to go there, so I wake up and do a meditation and prayer, and then I go swimming. And every time I get up in the morning, I'm not going to swim that day. No, I don't want to go swimming. And then I put my bathing suit on. It's the weirdest stuff I do. Anyway, I'm very grateful today for my life. My kids are doing okay. I have one son who's really in trouble right now, and I guess wasn't going to talk about it, but my youngest, Scott, who a lot of you know, is in kidney failure, and is going to be put on dialysis in the next couple weeks, and it's hard to swallow. And he never thinks that it has anything to do with food or alcohol. He's a heavy drinker. And he justifies it and calls it different names, and now he's going to be on dialysis. And both his parents were alcoholics and sober, so who knows, but he never believes that he has this disease. And I've had to really be quite Al-Anon-y about it, I'm telling you. I can't tell him, you know, I can't tell him, I'm just supporting him. And he has four kids. He's a single dad. His wife is on the streets drinking and using. And, you know, it's a challenge, but challenges will get better, and it just makes me stronger to do other things and to help other people. I sponsor a lot of women now, and I love it. It's probably my favorite thing in the whole world to do is to work with ladies. I mean, giving this thing away is the best thing in the whole world. I know that. What else? I don't know. I'm probably going to be short tonight, but I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll be 49 years sober in March, and it's all because of what I learned here in the Pacific Group, and I want to thank you for my life. Thank you.
There are birthdays at this meeting for every 365 days of continuous sobriety. We have a cake with the appropriate number of candles on it. We define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, or anything which affects you from the neck up. If you're a regular attender of this meeting and you would like to take a cake, please see me at the door before the meeting. If you're taking a cake tonight, come to the door, come over to the left side, and everybody's there, so line up in order of sobriety. If you're taking a cake online, email Kimberly K at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org by noon on Wednesday. Hybrid birthdays will be shown after the in-person birthdays at the meeting. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on our cakes. And at the end of the year, this candle money is our contribution to AA organizations worldwide. So please see my assistants at the door when you sign up to take your cake. If you're participating online, please arrange for this with our treasurer, Lauren B. at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org. Now let us sing briskly and speak briefly. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear AAs. Happy birthday to you. Keep coming back. I'm sorry if I'm not as good a singer as Steve. Last week. Anyway, our first birthday is for Joel S. for 1 year. Yeah.
Joel, alcoholic. Mary, thank you for letting me take a cake. I want to thank Andrew L., my sponsor, for giving me a cake. I want to thank his sponsor, Tina A., and her sponsor, Sharon C., and all my sober sisters and brother, and of course, for good. I want to thank Dave W., who is my AA spirit animal, and I want to thank Nick L. for keeping me in my seat in the beginning, and I also want to thank UCLA Cardiovascular Department for making me come to AA. Thank you.
Our second birthday is for M-A-T-Y-N, Matin, is that right? Okay, so it's misspelled. It's for Martin. Okay, Martin, for 2 years, and, okay, happy birthday. All right, well, I'm not doing such a good job. Happy birthday, Martin. Yeah.
I'm Martin. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Clancy, for the structure. Thank you, my sponsor, Paul Jacoby, and thank you, PG Group.
Happy birthday, Martin. Our next birthday is for 9 years for Gurpinder. Now, that was spelled right, so this is weird. Okay.
Thank you so much. Kapinder, alcoholic. Thank you, Mary, for letting me take that cake. Thank you to my awesome sponsor, Brian Adley. I'd like to say thank you to Pacific Group and my wonderful husband, Eric. Thanks.
Our next birthday is for 12 years for Aaron R.
Hi, my name is Erin. I'm an alcoholic. First, for my sobriety, I'd like to thank God and my beautiful sponsor, Mary Murphy, my AA sisters, class of 2010, Clancy for the structure of this group, PGAA as a whole, and all of you.
Our next birthday is for 23 years for Sean R. McTeague.
Sean, alcoholic. Thank you, Michael Clancy, God.
Okay. Our next birthday is for 31 years for Jennifer F.
Jennifer, alcoholic. I want to thank God, Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor Duffy on Zoom, I love you so much, my grand sponsor Sharon for giving me my cake, all of my sponsees and my sobriety sisters, PG and Clancy for the structure.
And our next birthday is for 36 years for Lily M.
Wait, Dave will help.
Okay.
Sorry, ready?
Okay.
Jeez Louise.
Hi, I'm Lily and I'm an alcoholic. Too many people to thank, but for these 36 years, thank you, God. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety sisters. My beloved husband, Luis M., my favorite son, Victor M., and thank you all for enveloping him with so much love and care. I appreciate it. My sponsee, Amy, my brother, Bob, Clancy, for saving my life, and my beautiful sponsor, Mary, for helping me to be the best that I can be. So, class of 86 and all of you in this group, God bless you.
Okay. Our next birthday is also for 36 years for Barbara B.
Oh, this is so hilarious. I know this is hilarious.
much.
Okay, good.
It takes 36 years to get up a step, you know? I'm Barbara. I'm an alcoholic. So grateful to be sober. Thank you, Mary, for everything, for your example, and for, you know, really leading us through these past couple of years and showing us the importance of staying sober no matter what and being active and being involved. I want to thank the women I sponsor, those here and those on Zoom. I want to thank A, I want to thank Clancy for his example, and I want to thank my true love, Jeremy.
And now for our last birthday in person is for 37 years for Nathan. Oh, past secretary. Did I say that, Nathan? No.
You say later. I'm Nathan. I'm an alcoholic. Whoever thought I'd be the last cake at Wednesday night, huh? Kind of amazing. I'd like to thank my sponsor, Mike, for driving out from Riverside to give me that cake tonight. Your example of service is not lost on me. Thank you. I'd like to thank my previous sponsors, Chuck Nesbitt, Paul C., Byron Wallin, and Bill D. I would like to thank my beautiful wedding bride of 27 years, Trish. And just, we live a great life together. I want to thank my family, my friends. I want to thank the class of 1985. And mostly I want to thank the Pacific Group. I grew up here. I love you guys. I love this group. I came in just a screwed up little kid and just had a great life here. Thank you.
So that's all the in-person birthdays, and now we have some Zoom birthdays. We have a Zoom birthday for, so I can see it, thanks. For 5 years for Nicole S., and her sponsor is Beth P. Our next birthday is for 28 years for Chris R., and her sponsor is Pat Yell. Cute picture. Our next birthday is for 33 years for John W., and his sponsor is Charlie C. Our next birthday is for 41 years for Judy M., and her sponsor is Helen T. And for 41 years, another past secretary, Tom B., for 41 years, and his sponsor is Matt J. We have a few special announcements tonight. One is that Mountain High is coming to